People were asking me to, this weekend about the course and how is it to be doing the course while you're doing other things. And I said, well, it's really good because, like our little motto says, experience is the mother of all teachers. So, it's one thing to be able to put yourself on a retreat, a silent retreat or something, and focus in that way, but life doesn't happen that way. Life is this continual balancing act in so many ways. And so for us to be able to merge many of the things that come into our lives and just get better and better at doing that, at merging them instead of pushing things aside and fighting things off. And we were also talking about how most people are in what's called like a low-grade adrenal exhaustion most of the time. And that comes from fighting things that don't even really exist. Thoughts in your mind and worries and maybe hauntings from the past or something. So that's another one to track. So we said we were going to talk about tracking a little bit, and so we will start talking about that, how the witness is a stepping up point to being able to track your life. And it's much like an animal. You just there's that smell, and what's that smell, and is that a smell that does something for me and doesn't? And my son and I were just talking about are the chickens laying, are they like brooding yet, And he said, well, I think they wait for a kind of a certain smell. They don't look at the calendar, of course, and say, oh, it's time to brood. There's these little, signs that come about for us to do what it's time to do. So tracking starts to help you notice those things and get away from the mind's preconceived ideas of this is what you do now and this is what you do then and such and such. And to allow the great mystery to unfold that way. There's a story Eckhart Tolle tells in A New Earth about the monkey in the tower. Maybe you've heard it. And it's basically a story about a monkey who locks himself in a tower and then kind of forgets that he locked him or put himself in a tower, and then says, like, why would somebody do this to me? Why would somebody lock me in this tower? And the only distraction for him is a window. And he looks at all of life going by through the window as he's like, why am I here? Why am I stuck in this room? And his mood begins to darken, and he gets depressed, and then the whole room becomes filled with darkness and demons, and he's quite convinced at one point, okay, this is hell. I'm in hell. And this goes on for a while, and then gradually he just gets used to his discomfort. He gets used to being sort of jabbed by his own thoughts, and it just sort of becomes normal in a strange way. And his surroundings become familiar to him. So this is familiar now. And then he just kind of starts also to sort of forget about it, and it begins to change. So when it gets into that familiar, bit by bit, it changes, and the demons slowly turn into angels, and what was hell becomes a paradise. And this starts happening for him that what was hell, the exact same things, are now being perceived by him as heavenly until he gets bored again. So it's that game the mind plays of like the raccoon again, turning the things over in your hand and going, oh, heaven, oh, hell, heaven, hell. And the real teaching of that story is that the door was never locked. He could have gotten out any time. And this weekend we had very much an experience of this, the heaven and the hell. One night was quite hellish, and it was in ceremony this weekend, as I mentioned, and the other night was quite gentle and you might say heavenly for some. Some, everybody's a little bit different. And it was a really nice exploration of that. So what is really happening? We're in it, sitting in a darkened room, yes? Everybody's in exactly the same place, but some people are perceiving it as hellish and some people are perceiving it as heaven. So it's clearly all in the mind. And how can we make peace with that? With a mind that is just continually entertaining itself by flipping from heaven to hell and heaven to hell. That's basically what the mind is doing, the little mind. It gets bored, and so it is always, we talked about boredom a little bit in some of the lessons, and it's creating something else. And mostly because it has no direction. So when you begin to entrain your mind to track and exercise your presence, your ability to witness, it engages the mind. So, the mind quite often in this heaven and hell scenario is really bored. It's like a child who is not being stimulated. So the idea, despite the busyness we all seem to have, like, what do you mean my mind's not stimulated, especially when you've got children and lots of different things to do? It's a different kind of stimulus. But to love your mind enough to also treat it like a child, like your beloved children, and really embrace it and take it in and teach it tracking. Tracking is a very important skill in the village. And consider all the things that you've been taught by your parents who, they just knew what they knew. They did their best. But you get to take over now yourself, of yourself, and teach yourself the things that you need to know. And that can be very entertaining. And then again, balancing it with a job and streams of income and just balancing it all, just balancing it all. Nothing's really going to change, and the idea of change, again, we've talked about it a bit here and there, but it's more like adaptation. The change has already happened. The universe is just waiting for each and every one to adapt. And some people are more adaptive than others. But change itself has already happened, as we spoke once before. It is here in front of you. It's not something waiting for you in the future. It's just about adapting. I'm just going to open the floor and see what wants to come up around this topic or anything, really. There's nothing there. We can do something as well that is. We're going to get into working with the impossible. So let's do a little round here of what for you is impossible? What seems impossible for you?
I can go.
Yeah, sure.
I kind of experienced exactly that in the past week. I was facing this weekend was my first sale of the year with my creations, and I kind of came to think that it was impossible to to do it appropriately so that I can bring in the income that I need. And I got really discouraged. And this was the whole week, not just the weekend, because I had a vision of how many things I wanted to sew. And there's all kinds of stuff that happened in my house and many unexpected visitors, and I'm a good hostess. And usually it would get me really, really stressed, but I know that right now I'm working really hard at not letting stress take over. So I kind of just accepted. And I was kind of feeling like, I think this is impossible. So, this is, yeah, I was really humbled again and kind of really questioning things and thinking maybe I have to give up. And yeah, no drama, but just
Beautiful.
looking at it for what it is.
Beautiful. Yeah, you feel very calm, and that's kind of the knack of it, is to just keep watching it. You're witnessing, right? You're witnessing this happening. This is what I had in mind. Didn't go that way. Oh well.
I mean, for me, it's been 4 years, and it's pretty much the same thing every time I have a show. And I'm just, like that saying, repeat, trying to do the same thing and expecting something different. Oh, I don't
Good, good.
I'm just, yeah, I'm trying to stay calm. It's kind of funny.
So if you can see impossible as a bridge, it's not a wall, it's actually a bridge that is. When you come to that conclusion, as you did on your own before we even started talking about this, which is so cool too, it's an invitation. This is impossible. And where it leads to, you don't know. It may lead to the same place. It may just lead to a new way of looking at what you're doing, or it could lead to something completely different. But it is like a just drop everything and cross the bridge. See where you are on the other side. Yeah, it just sounds like what you're doing.
Yeah.
Gonna keep on keeping on, but you're not in that frantic, attached state anymore. And then that again
Yeah.
is what drains your adrenals, it drains your energy, it takes the life out of you, quite literally. Beautiful.
It's true.
Well done. I was seeing something the other day. Somebody wrote about fear being an acronym, which I've seen many different versions of it. And one was forget everything and run. Is one version of fear, and the other one was face everything and rise. So there too, you drop the fear. Fear delivers you. Like again, this weekend we talked quite a bit about fear and how, fear was designed by love to keep us safe. And that's quite true. Love is very unbiased. Love will do whatever it takes to reach you. Break your heart, mend your life, you name it, yeah? And fear itself is like this, also like a threshold, a bridge to something else. And it's almost like fear delivers you to the impossible. Finally, you go, this is impossible. And just see where it comes, see where you get to from that. And you just sort of turn around, wave goodbye. Thanks, fear, for taking me here. It's taken me a while to get off you. The addiction of fear, basically. And so now I'm weaning myself from the fear. I've stepped into what seems impossible. and take it from there. In one sit a few months ago, we were working with the impossible, and somebody said whatever it was that was impossible for them. And by the end of the day, after a few more rounds had come back and it came back to her, and whatever that impossibility was, she was actually sitting right in it as a possibility. So it's also can do that loop. So kind of a bridge that you start on and then you go, oh, it's actually a circle. And it brings me right back, but with a completely different perspective. And the kind that makes you forget everything else. It just never was. And that's really evolution, you know, is moving forward in such a way that the past or your patterning of thinking, it actually disappears. And there's so much grace in that. When you open to the possibility of it. Now, there's another impossibility. A lot of people think, well, I've thought this way for a really long time. How could I just stop thinking like this? Well, in the same way that you were in 1 minute completely convinced you're in hell, and in another minute, you're completely convinced you're in heaven. So you can count on that. Working for you. Again, we're always focusing here on having things work for us. But in an interesting way where the master is actually running through your veins, in your blood. And the master is continually saying into your blood, aware. Aware, aware, be aware, be aware. So you are imbued with the mastery, but not like a master over a slave. So when we say make things work for us, it sounds like power over, but it's actually power in you. And you make things work for you by your own discipline, by your own strength, by your own will. Have there been any other things coming up that like to be brought forth? You remember satsang, we're doing both counsel and satsang here, and Emuji speaks of satsang as that which burns away, which is not you. So it's a fire that doesn't burn you, it burns away that which is not you. So you bring what you have to the light, and that light will burn away what is not you.
I'll share a little bit. Mm-hmm. So this just came up last night, but it had arisen about 6 weeks ago and then came up again last night. So I teach Kundalini Yoga, and I've been teaching it for about a year and a half. And I'm not certified in the, like, Kundalini as taught by Yogi Bhajan. I haven't done my certification, but I've practiced it for about 13 years. Have done other teacher trainings in yoga, but just have not been able to do the Kundalini teacher training. And just started teaching it a year and a half ago because it was so much part of my personal practice, and it just felt very natural to start doing that as the main yoga that I teach. And it's created a bit of a kerfuffle in the few Kundalini yoga teachers here on the island because I'm not certified in their tradition, in their specific tradition. And so it came up about 6 weeks ago, and I just sort of took a back step of just like I noticed my inner response of like I had a lot of over what came up, I had a lot of sadness and I cried and just watched that and then just decided, you know, I don't want to get involved in the discussion. I'll just keep doing what I love. And then last night, another just really strong message came through about, oh, I'm undermining their system and stuff. And again, just watching my response of primarily feeling sad, like the tears are the first thing that come. And then discouragement comes. And then I sit with how to respond versus do I simply just let it all go and not give any energy to it, or do I be a little bit more active in my response? And that's where I'm at right now. And yeah, that's where I'm at right now with it. And I'm just aware it holds energy, and I'm not getting right into it, but I'm trying to feel it. There's like I feel a bit of the personal being affected, and yeah, I'll just leave it at that for now.
So it sounds like a test, a challenge. And particularly at this stage, it's very interesting because we are in stage three where you are bringing the teachings back to the people. And here you are in the situation where you are bringing the teachings to the people and you're being challenged. Are you worthy? And that's really the gist of it. It sounds like it's about Kundalini yoga, and it is, right? Everything is and it isn't. And there is levels of respect to be noticed, to be aware of. And just continually watching yourself in it, as it sounds like you're already doing. And just keep tracking it. Tracking it. What's it doing today? What's it doing today? How does it feel for me today? What's going on out there? And just keep tracking. And do you show up to your class? You track that. You don't plan it. Now, you might have a class booked or something, right? And it can be quite nerve-wracking in a way to really sit in the unknown. In the sphere of the known. In other words, you've told people you're going to show up at a class and there's this resistance going on. How is it going to fall? Are you just not going to show up? Are you going to tell people? We don't know. We do not know. And to sit in that, I don't know what's going to happen, is a really beautiful place, and it's the place of greatest ripeness. You know, if you can just sense that when you sit in that, I don't know, you're being permeated with just juice, you know, the juice of life, where the thoughts and everything are like squeezing it out of you, you know? And, you know, and because you're a sponge, it's okay because you can have those emotions and have those thoughts and know that they're doing the contracting. And then sit in the I don't know and expand. I mean, it's just like the breath. And then you're going to contract a little bit. So, and this is also the balance of heaven and hell. So here's the kind of hellish part. And then you breathe again and it opens and it's expansive, heaven-like. And this is a continuum. It goes on every few seconds, even. Because when you get stuck in the one, that's the stuck part, right? You start convincing yourself of things. So I don't know if this would work for you in this scenario, but is there an impossibility here for you? If there was, what might it sound like?
Mm-hmm. When you asked that question, this is what came up, but I was like, okay, what's the impossibility? And I'm not sure if this connects, but what it brings up for me is that we all know to a certain extent, yes, you know, do your due diligence, get your training so you can, you know, do a good job. But also, you know, that can be over emphasized to the lack of experience when, as we move on in our life, it's really our experience in life of what we're bringing. And so it just came up this like discouragement of like, oh, and I know like, okay, I'm not that old, but I feel like, you know, okay, in my 40s now, like still, like, I guess maybe that would be the impossible, like still people are elevating, you know, the dogma or the credentials over the actual lived experience. And that was kind of like the, oh, like, you got to be kidding. That was the, so I don't know if that connects with the impossible, but that's kind of what came up when, sure, when you asked that question.
Sure. Well, that's what connects for you. Mm-hmm. And that's a really beautiful place of inquiry. Have you got to be kidding? This is still happening. And it's beautiful. Like, mm-hmm, that's evolution. Does it have to always be that way? Again, with respect to learning the essential techniques, mm-hmm, you know, what carries this work through, mm-hmm, and the essence of it basically is the essence, yeah, not so much the 1, 2, 3, 4, but the essence. Mm-hmm. You know, let me tell you, in shamanism, like, I'm not the most studied shaman at all, and I get some flack for that sometimes. But I also know that it keeps me on my toes. For instance, another shaman said to me once, he said, you know, you got to watch what you're doing because you can really hurt yourself and you can hurt other people. And I hear him say that to me over and over and over again. And it keeps me sharp. It keeps me on my toes. You know, I didn't let it take me down. And it's not even about letting. Like, that's what I mean about sitting in the unknown. I didn't plan to be a shaman in the first place, and it just keeps happening. Like, even this weekend, I thought, mm-hmm, you know what, I think this is my last one. This is really exhausting, and mm-hmm, you know, whatever it is, right? It was just sort of a feeling. And you know, I've come at it going, no, obviously you're going to do this again. We're not really the choosers. We are and we're not. I think we said already last week, the learning is about choosing to do that which you have no choice but to do. And that's a very profound teaching. Choosing to do that which you have no choice but to do. So as I've spoken to you already about sitting in that unknown, and then, like, how do you get yourself to where you're going? Like, life already knows where you're going. You just didn't get the memo yet. And we get all blah, 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 blah in between, yeah? So sitting with that, and that's the great, that's great spirit walking with great mystery. Great spirit knows where you're going. And great spirit knows you're going into the great mystery. Mm-hmm. So that's really the dance of balance. And to just keep working with that. And so you're listening to them. Like, I listened to my friend. I didn't stop what I was doing based on what he said. But it was like, you know, I also, the power of the word don't. I had an elder once in a situation, and he kind of was pissed off at me, and he said, "Don't be so sure what you did and didn't get." And that too just seared me and stuck with me for a long time. The word don't in particular. So people are saying to you, don't. And don't is like an impossibility. Yeah. Someone mm-hmm. says don't, it's as though they're setting up an impossibility. But there you go. There's the bridge that's coming down. It's like a drawbridge, right? Don't do that. The bridge mm-hmm. just like tunk, chunks down, right? Now, are you going to cross that bridge or not? And crossing it doesn't mean doing or not doing. It just means crossing it into the unknown. So you're in a very beautiful place, both of you have spoken already to, you know, make this return. You're coming into the return phase, and life has given you some beautiful material to work with. Yeah.
Woohoo!
Okay, great, another chance to learn, yay. It's exciting, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just remember all your tools, like, you know, the witnessing, the tracking, the balancing, the pole dancing. And you got such a big medicine bag growing here. And sometimes you could just flip through the teachings, and whatever your eyes fall upon will be a nice little piece of medicine for you, undoubtedly. What else is there? Something that is not you, which is ready to be burned off.
Okay, it's a little quieter where I'm at right now, so I could speak. I don't even feel like it's impossible, but it is kind of I don't even know what the word is, but coming up in the future, there's going to be about 2, possibly 3 weeks of me kind of doing some, as Neith likes to call it, double parenting, where I'll have my boys somewhere, because we won't actually have a home at that time, somewhere in either BC or Alberta, or possibly even Ontario for that time, while their father is away doing other things. And that would be kind of the longest stretch I will have with my kids without the other parent. So I sometimes kind of just touch in on that and how it feels, and then I also kind of, my mind mulls over it when I've had like a stressful parenting moment or experience. So that's something that's kind of on my radar that I want to kind of with grace have a really great adventure with my two little boys, and there will be family and friends and travel, and but it kind of feels like a long stretch of time, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of just, I guess, gathering my tools and my resources and my, I guess, grown-up superhero outfit for this whole experience. And, yeah, that's what kind of came up when you asked that question for me.
Beautiful. Yeah. again, it's been laid out for you and such all perfect timing, and the fact that you are taking this course and you probably didn't even know you were moving when you signed up. Is that possible?
No, it happened, I would say, almost simultaneously. Yeah. So
yeah,
it was, yeah.
Yeah, good. So it's all just, again, laying out perfectly, and you're dancing it
yep.
beautifully by the sounds of it. You're aware of the challenges, and mm-hmm. you are checking your tools, and you know, there's that preparation is very, very important. So again, we'll go, you know, the Hopis say that prepare for the worst indeed and expect the best, and they kind of go hand in hand. It's like you know, in council we say speak from the heart, listen from the heart, be spontaneous and be lean. They just kind of happen. Once it's been spoken, it just, life will follow those instructions.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, you know, prepare for the worst, obviously. I mean, that means just, I don't know, have enough clothes for the kids and food and, you know, the basic stuff, and just expect the best.
Mm-hmm.
And the best can come in many, many forms, of course. It can be hardship and trying times. And you can just keep telling yourself, always do your best, like Don Miguel Ruiz says, you know, always do your best. And we've talked about this a bit too, what that really means. It just means participating in life and not shutting down. And there's no bar to the best. It just means showing up and being aware. And you know, if you can remind yourself too, and this might be some really nice medicine for you, about the how awareness is actually in your blood, and it's like running through your veins and all through your body. And so when we contract, when we become tense, obviously we're cutting that off. So just that relaxing, and then, oh, there's awareness. It's not even something you have to conjure up. You know, it's just even in every expansion of the breath, there it is. There's awareness. Thank you. You know, we think awareness is something, another thing we have to do, another task, another job, but it's actually in you, as is consciousness. And all you have to do is like, is call it up. And just even say awareness, just say the word. And fill in the space of angst and fret and such and frustration with the word aware, or I am. I actually was just working with, I've been working with tobacco for a while, and in ceremony we use it, and I sometimes use it in between ceremonies, and I was getting more and more into that. And I decided last week to, well, I didn't decide, it just happened. And it was mostly because my assistant, she's a marijuana smoker, and I had really asked her to abstain before ceremony, which we always do, ask people to abstain. And she said she would do her best. And I just felt in myself, I wanted to be in solidarity with her. So I also stopped with the smoking tobacco. And I use the word I am every time a craving would come in. We talk about cravings too in ceremony, how when we don't eat and drink, it's and we feel thirst and hunger, it's an invitation for your spirit to take that place of the craving or the addiction. And I just sort of came to me to say, I am. And I would just keep filling the space with I am. And it was just great. It just went away. It was no hardship. And then I just checked in with her in ceremony, and she also was fine. She said it was challenging, but she did it. So we kind of went into one mind, which was really nice. But more important is that idea of filling in the space with the power of the word, such as aware. Bring calm, to bring grace to your life. Grace, there was no struggle there. It was just remember to say the words and it just sort of flips you out, flips you sort of from the heaven to hell, hell to heaven. And so that would apply to anything, not just things like tobacco or marijuana, is any kind of addiction, control, resentment is kind of an addiction. You know, it might be one that we only pick up every once in a while, but there's all these behavior patterns that are addictions, and they're only addictions because we believe that's who we are, because we believe it's our identity. It's all about identity and being able to shed the identity that believes it is this way because your mother taught you that, or your father, or whatever. So to be able to let go of those demons, because they are demons. And the demons that, you know, are spoken of in the story of the monkey in the tower. And then they become comfortable, the demons. They become what you would call normal, yes? But in the story, as that happens, you know, their change does occur. And again, I had a situation where I was basically attacked by a demon in ceremony. And it was so overwhelming. I can't even explain. And then I had enough wits about me to say, this is not me, and to separate myself from it. And I did so with the word surrender. Just surrender to it. Don't fight it. Don't fight it. Just drop it. Like, drop my resistance, which is what drop it means. And I saw how surrender also was like it was the key to letting go. So we're often talking about letting go as if we just kind of ignore something or keep throwing it out, it's going to go away, but it doesn't work that way. You have to surrender to it. So as well, if you come into, I mean, a demon is sort of an overwhelming situation of any kind. And it becomes so thick, sometimes you don't even know you're in it, but then somehow you get wind of, I'm in this. In a similar way that we worked with the proximity of the reality bubbles in the beginning, right? All of a sudden you go, whoa, I'm in this funk, or I'm in this fear or chaos. And as soon as that thought comes forward, it's a invitation to allow that change to come through and say, okay, I see it, I surrender. And it just separated off. And separate it off again far enough, like we also talked with the reality bubbles, sometimes they're like boom in your face and you can't see it. It's like, you know, fish doesn't know they're in water. And so you can separate off enough to say, aha, that is something other than me. And then let it work its way through. And that's also a form of tracking. And it begins with awareness. And it's an interesting form because it was talking so much now, people talk so much about separation. And in fact, the last, or next piece you're going to get is a bit about isolation, separation. Certainly we've talked a lot about how separation is necessary for wholeness to occur. And again, when you are kind of attacked by a thought form and you surrender to it, and then it goes far enough back that you can see it, you can work with it, and then you're tracking it and just keep watching it. Like even your situation with the yoga, this is like a demonic force really attacking you in a sense, right? I mean, your own community, and that's harsh. You know, when your own community starts stepping on you, that's one of the most ouchy things. It's so confusing. It's so confusing. I mean, really, it's like your family kicking you out. Mm-hmm. And so it is very much like a demonic force overwhelming you. And So just surrender.
When you say surrender,
yes,
do you mean allow?
Well, you know, no, it's the word was surrender. Remember, each word has a very unique quality.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, people commonly use letting go, but letting go is like the later result of surrender. Mm-hmm. So first one must surrender, and then I would say letting go, and then allow.
Mm-hmm.
First surrender, and then when you surrender, the separation occurs that allows you to let go of it. Right? Okay, I've let go of this demonic force overwhelming me and overruling me. And now I get to step into allow, like, what is going to happen now?
Mm.
So that's a beautiful clarification. Thanks for bringing that out. Okay. So steps. Now, the very first step actually is devotion. Is being devoted enough to your growth that you are willing to surrender so that you can depart from this thing and let whatever's coming come.
Mm-hmm.
That's grace in a nutshell, in four acts.
Mm.
Yeah. Instructions are so valuable. Makes life so much easier. And each of these situations are your instructions. You know, and all the people that come into your life are all a part of your instructions. And that's where humility comes in as well, is being able to, with grace and humility, just take what you're given and work with it and just keep, you know, even a demonic force and see what else is there. Because everything is everything, and everything has two sides, at least. You know, diversity is diversity. Diversity means everything is diverse. So even the pattern we just spoke of devotion, surrender, letting go, and allow, will likely change. But right now, that works. And that's the beauty of diversity, is the next time it might be really different. And you will learn other ways. You will just keep on learning and learning and learning. And being fascinated. That's a great key too. I mean, even the word fascinate sounds so rich and big. And it is, the root of it is fascia, right? The connective tissue of your body. And the fascination just keeps you together. It basically holds it all together. Keep feeling fascination. Looking, learning, moving on, as the song says. So either, you know, seeing, observing, noticing, all those pieces, witnessing, tracking, learning, and moving on. The eyes are it, yeah? We perceive most of the world through our eyes. And every time your eyes move, it fires something in your brain. And that doesn't even mean physical movement, it's just perceptions. Just keep moving from one to the next, to the dance. Just keep the dance flowing. But staying close to the pole again, on the middle path.
Could you give another example of what surrender feels like?
Why don't you speak to that?
I'm not sure, that's why I'm asking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm trying to distinguish. Like it felt like I started to get it when you experience about your experience with the demon of surrendering, but then that's when I asked, like, oh, so is that allowing? But it wasn't quite that.
You know what happened is the word came at the same time as the action. As it was happening, the word filled in the space. And then I went, oh, that's what that was. You see?
Okay.
And therein is experience is the mother of all teachers. I could tell you a thousand different ways that surrender might feel, but you have to experience it for yourself. And you've got the opportunity to do so right now. So again, beautiful inquiry. What is it to surrender? And not get caught up in that either, because that'll become a demon. Yeah? Just, you've heard this little story, and one day it will come for you. Yeah? And in the meantime, just the awareness and witness. So the awareness is the key as well. And there's lots of keys on this ring. Just yeah, keeping your awareness tip top at all times. And that means aware that I'm sleepy, aware that I'm sad, aware that I'm frustrated. I mean, I was aware I was losing it, basically, and that was not okay. So there's where that code of moral ethics comes in as well. We've spoken of a little bit that is ingrained in you by your council of we, and they will do everything at all cost to maintain that code of ethics. You know when something is not right. Yet you're not the judge. You're being carried. And if you remember the parable too of Christ's footprints in the sand, and the man saying, but in my darkest, deepest times, there was only one set of footprints. Where were you when I needed you? If you remember, Christ's words were, those were my footprints. I was carrying you. Having faith in that you are being held, you are being guided. You're not alone. You're so not alone. And to let that come forth and show you, keep showing you. And you can also, it's a good thing to ask, is please show me. Show me. Show me the way. But with that humility of no expectation, just like when you set an intention, just a willingness to be shown, be teachable. I don't know. I don't know. We're coming to the end of our time here. There's a few minutes left. Been a fast hour, it feels like. So if there's any last minute little bits. Okay. Well, we'll meet again next Monday. And again, if you have anything to, bigger things to burn off, you know where to find me. And the teachings will keep coming.